We're holding on your days on the days, about three quarters of the way down the Omud. The line begins afilu. Havu gavra b'kaddish b'tzitza d'asa. There was a man who was mekaddish, a woman, with a mat made out of hadassim. There's various other detailed explanations among the mefarshim, including that means a bouquet of hadassim, whatever it is. Amrulay v'halas b'shava prota. What are you doing? There's no shava prota in it. Amrulahu. So he said, okay.
Do they know?
You can assume they knew the value of these things. This is something that was commonly available. They know. He says, okay, in that case, actually, then let me be Makadisher with the four zuzin that are hidden inside that mat or bouquet or what have you. Yeah. However, Shakalta, so fine, she took it. She didn't throw it away. But she didn't say anything. Does that work? Does that mean she accepted the Kedushin with the four Zuzim or not? What you have over here is she's being quiet after she received the money. Meaning when she first received it, she didn't know the money's there. She received it thinking it's worth less than a Shavu Prota, therefore there's no Kedushin over here. Now afterwards you tell her there's four Zuzim, she didn't say anything, that doesn't count for anything. Why didn't she say anything? She figures, look, you know, I didn't accept it originally as Kedushin. And, you know, also, I don't want to bother explicitly telling him, I don't want you, or whatever, I don't want to have anything to do with the guy, or whatever. Therefore, no condition. Had he told her to begin with, before he gave her the condition, here's a bundle of hadassim, whenever a mat of hadassim, and in it are four zuzim, and I'm a kaddish with it, and she didn't say anything, then fine, but yeah. Incidentally, by the way, before we should talk about what we learned before about that Shmuel says, even if it's not worth a shavu prota here, it may be worth a shavu prota in Madai. What do we need to bring in?
In a place where you get married.
No. We said according to Shmuel, if there's a possibility that it's a shavu prota someplace else, there's at least a suffix kedushin. And if you know it's worth a shavu prota someplace else, so that's one answer. We learned that Rambam said that that's one. You're saying that because it might dry out. That's one answer. That Rambam we learned yesterday. That Rambam holds if the thing is going to spoil before it gets to Madai, or wherever the place is, then it actually doesn't work because it's not worth a shavu prota here, and it's not going to be worth a shavu prota by the time you get there.
The bouquet,
or the mat, whatever it is. So this is one possibility. The mat would dry out before you ever get there.
She was actually holding that. She had the mat.
Well, she gave it to her. She held it in her hand, and then after she's holding it, he says it contains four dozen.
She didn't say you get it back.
Exactly. But still, when she first received it, she didn't think that it was condition because she didn't figure it was worth a shavu prota. Anyway, so there's other answers. There's other answers also. In fact, there are Rishonim who say based on this, we see the halacha is not like Shmuel. However, the Rambam and most other Rishonim who do pass them like Shmuel would have to use one of those answers. Either it would spoil by the time you got there, or the Gemara is not even getting into that. Because first we have to deal with the question, is there Vadai condition over here because the four Zuzim?
There might be.
In other words, right, according to that way of looking at it, there might still be a suffix. We're not getting into that right now. First, let's figure out whether there's a Vadei condition based on the four Zuzim. Later on, we can go back, if we figure that doesn't work, then we can go back and figure, okay, it might be worth a Shavu Prota in Madai. Amar Rav Menam in the law, so Rav says, where do I get this idea that if she's quiet after she received it, then it doesn't count for anything? The Tanya, we learn it right. So Amar La Kinsi Sela Zuba Pekodin, suppose a man says to a woman, take this money, I'm giving it to you as a Pekodin, to hold on for me for a while. Mechazava Amar La Skadjali Boy, and later on he says, actually, be Niskadish to me with it. Bishas Matan Mois Mekodesh, if he said that before he gave her the money, he started by saying, I'm going to give you a money for a pikadon. Later, before he actually gave it to her, he said, you know what, be niskadish to me with it. Well, then, fine, when she received it, knowing that there's kedushin. La'acha matan mois, if he says it after she received the money, rotsa mekudeshes, if she agrees to it, then she's mekudeshes, loy rotsa ain't mekudeshes, and if she doesn't agree, she's not mekudesh. So we got to consider, my rotsa or my loy rotsa. What do we mean that she wanted, that she agreed, or she didn't agree? Does it mean what you would think it means? That rotsa means she says, okay. So again, the scenario would be, he gave it to her saying it's a pekodin. After he gave it to her, he says, actually, I want you to be niskadish to me with it. And she says yes, then he'd say it's kedushin, and if she says no, it's not. Mitwal the resha, in that case, then that would imply that in the resha, ki omra loy, nami habit, if she doesn't, well, in the resha, ki omra loy, because the resha didn't make a distinction between whether she wants or not. Implying in the Reisha, whether she said yes or no, it wouldn't matter. Nami have a condition, it would also be condition. How could that be? If Yomer Loi Nami have a condition, how could it be that if she says no, it would also be condition? Am I? Why? For sure.
It is safer.
The safer is distinguishing, on the face of it, let's assume, if we assume, as in the Hava Amina, that the safer is distinguishing between whether she says yes or no, then that would imply that in the Reisha, where it didn't make that distinction, it doesn't matter. Even if he gives it to her and says, Hadayat Mekudeshesli, and she says no, she'd be Mekudesh. What do you mean? She said no. That, obviously, that's not a kedushin. Elalav rotsa de amra ein. So we have to reinterpret the sefer to say that rotsa in the sefer means she says yes. Lo rotsa doesn't mean that she says no. It means the ishtika mishtika. It means she just stays quiet.
Lo rotsa
means the ishtika mishtika, that she is staying quiet. So now we can understand. So now going back to the Reisha. So the Reisha was saying, he originally said, I'm going to be giving you a Mekadesh. Then he changed his mind or whatever. Then he said, actually, I want to be Mekadesh with it. She takes it. Obviously, if she said no, it wouldn't be Kedushin. We don't need to say that. But if she said yes, it's a valid Kedushin, of course. And also, if she doesn't say anything, it's a valid Kedushin. Same as a regular Kedushin, right, where the husband says, Hareat Mekadesh with the Tabasu, and she doesn't say anything. In the Sefer, because he only said anything about Kedushin after he gave it to her, then the Sefer is saying, only if she says yes will that be a valid Kedushin. If she doesn't say anything, and needless to say, if she says no, then it won't be. So there you go. Shema mina shtika dalacha matan mois loy klomu. So you see that being quiet after receiving the money, after he gave her the money, doesn't count for anything, which is exactly our scenario here. Only after she received the mat with the hadassim, did he tell her, by the way, there's four zuz in it, which I want to be Mekadesh with? She didn't say anything, and we see from the implication of this Braitha, since we're now understanding Lo Rotsa means she didn't explicitly say yes, then there you go. No condition. Why, well, Koshuba Pumnara Meshmedir Puna, Brejir of Yeshua. So now in Pumnara, the name of the city in Babel, they had a question on this on this statement of Rovers that you can derive from this Braitha to the case of the Hadassim and the four Zuzim. They had a question in the name of Rav Huna Brady Rav Yeshua. Me dummy, how can you compare the two cases? In the case of the Braitha, he gave her the money as a Kikodin, meaning when she first received it from him, she had to take it because he's giving it to her as a Kikodin. Well, not she had to take it. No, she could have said no. She could have said, no, I don't want the kodin. Fine, but she didn't know the tradition involved. When she took it as a kodin, then once she has it as a kodin, she doesn't have the ability to just throw it away afterwards. Favra, she'll figure, he gave them to her as a kodin. So now she figures, isha dinu lahu umitbiri. So now she figures, if I throw this kodin away, and it gets broken, or there's a different case, or it gets lost. Then I'm going to be chayvin, because look, I'm a shomer. I may not know very much halacha, as the Gemara is going to say in a couple of lines, but I know enough to know that a shomer is responsible for what they're holding on to, and if it gets lost or whatever, then I'm going to be chayv. So in the case of the Braitha, the fact that she doesn't say anything, fine. All it means is, I don't intend to accept it as kedushin. I intend to keep holding it for you as a cotton. I'm not going to throw it away. I'm not going to throw it down on the ground in front of you or whatever, because I don't want to be chayev for having to pay it back. But I'm going to hold on. It doesn't mean I want to get married to you, exactly. Halacha b'teres kedushin yavinu ni'alah. Here, the fact is, he originally gave her the bundle of hadassim, the mat of hadassim, saying, I want to be mekadesh you. Okay, it's not worth a shavah frotza. That's a side issue. But she knew that he's trying to do some form of kedushin. So if she didn't want to, if she didn't like that idea, Vishdinu, let her throw him away. There's no cotton over here. Why should she think that she'd be chayev for repaying it to him if she throws it away? She should know well enough to know that if she throws it away, nothing's going to happen. She's not going to be chayev for it. Therefore, there's a difference. She should have to actually say no or throw it away in order for it to not be conditioned. So now Rav Achoy comes in with an objection to that question. And by the way, to this question that we had in the name of Rav Huna Brady of Yeshua, that how do you compare the case of the mat with the case of the Braitha? It's an Rav Huna Brady of Yeshua asked, how can you compare them? Now Rav Achoy is going to come to say, what exactly is your question? I'm going to slug up your question. Tosfos points out in a few places of Shas, by the way, at the beginning of Bava Metzia is one of them, that the Rabachoi we're mentioning over here, throughout Shas, you have there's some Amoroyim who have a unique Lashon always attached to them. Rabachoi, when he has a question, a lot of times it'll be introduced with the word Parich. There's a few places in Shas, for example, where Abaya, you'll have Layat ala Abaya, like Abaya cursed anybody who follows this halacha, or whatever, a few different expressions. Tosfos says that Rabachoi, who has this expression, Parich, attached to him, is actually one of the early Rabbanon and Savoroi. Which in that case, then, we're kind of jumping back and forth in history over here. We have Rava, who belongs to the middle of the time of Amoraim. You have Rav Huna of Radio Vishua, who was one of the top Talmidim, who was the Rosh Hashim after him. And now, the Gemara is now interjecting with something that the Sivaroim, I guess, put in over here as an editorial thing. Later on, 100-odd years later, Rav Achoy came up with an objection against Rav Huna of Radio Vishua's question. His question is, Baltu Kulu Nashi Dina Gemiri? What do you think, that all women are familiar with the dinim? They don't know this concept that there's a difference between whether I accepted shmira on it, whether I accepted it as a pikadon versus when he gave it to me as supposed kiddushin. She may think that just as well, the same way as if I received it as a shomer, I'm going to be chayav for it if I throw it away. Same logic, if she gave it to me as kiddushin, and there's no kiddushin, if I throw it away, I'm going to be chayav for it. She may not know that difference. Hachinami, so the same thing. Savra, she may figure, isha dina lahu mitbiri, if I throw them away and they get broken or lost, whatever the lashon is, mischayav nebachu isayu, then I'm going to be chayav to pay back for them. So again, you could argue that it is the same thing as the pikadon. But you can't assume that she should have thrown it away, figuring that it's kedushin versus a pikadon. She may not realize that distinction, so therefore she held on to it not because she wants to accept kedushin, but because she didn't want to be responsible for paying back for it.
Well, she did give back, so you said, "No, thank you."
He went away, let's say, or whatever. I mean, she may not even want to, whatever. I mean, he has his hands at his side, you know, or there's going to press it into his hands, you know, whatever. I mean, whatever, she doesn't have the option necessarily. She may have the option, fine, she had the option maybe to put it down in front of him, but let's say he's not there. Let's say he gave her the kedushin and then ran away, whatever. He walked off, okay, and I was tired of her finished, you know.
She didn't feel that...
Yeah, whatever, what is she going to do, run after him, whatever,
Without having
it. Yeah. So now, Rav Acha bar Rav sent a question on this to Ravina. So now we're going, by the way, in terms of the generations, we're going back now to the generation after Rav Huna b'Rei d'Rav Yeshua. So he asked Ravina the question. Kai Gavnamai. Okay, bottom line, what is the halacha in a case like this? Sholachli, he sent back to him, Anam l'shmielan hodur Rav Huna b'Rei d'Rav Yeshua. We actually have not heard this question in the name of Rav Huna b'Rei d'Rav Yeshua. Often, the Shmuel who you who have heard of it, Chushula, you should be concerned about it, and why again? You meaning you, Ravina, and whatever the people of Pumnahara who reported this question. So Rashi learns that at face value, what he's saying is, in other words, we never heard that Rav Huna b'Rei d'Rav Yeshua ever mentioned to us his Talmidim that he ever had this question. We never heard it said over in his name. You're saying it was said in his name. Okay, you know, you're entitled to you know, you deal with it. I wash my hands of it, kind of. There were other proportion who point out, as Rashba says, he doesn't mean that. I mean, okay, so you haven't heard it in the name of Rabbi Yeshua, the Kasha is still a Kasha. He's basically saying, now, Rabbi Choy, according to this, hadn't been born yet, because he's one of the Rabbanon Tzvaroi. But he said the question was known before that. The Gemara just reported it to Rabbi Choy, as I guess the first one who actually said it explicitly in the Mishnah. So Ravina could be saying, we are not concerned about that. The Lo Shmielon, and a lot of times the Gemara doesn't mean we didn't hear of it, means we don't hold of it. We don't hold that this question of Rabbi Huna b'Rei d'Rav Yeshua is particularly strong, because we can argue against it using the reason that the Gemara gives the name of Rabbi Choy or whatever other logic you could use. You feel it's a strong question. Okay, you be choshish to it, and say that there's a sophic condition in this case. Another case: Have he itzah to have a kamazavna varshchi? There was a woman who was selling. Varshchi, Rashi says, means like ribbons or little bands or something. There's a couple of other possibilities that Rishonim bring up of what it means. It means little means. Yeah, could be that. I think Rabbeinu Gershom says it means like some kind of little hats or something. Whatever. Anyway. Also, who gabra chotav varshcha mina. One person came, a man came by, and grabbed one varshecha from her, one of these ribbons or whatever. She says, give it back. And if I give it back to you, are you going to be discouraged to me? She took back the ribbon, and she didn't say anything. So Rav Nachman says, in that case, she doesn't have to say that she accepted it as kiddushin. She's able to say, ein shakli, yes, I did take it. Vididi shakli, all I took back is what belongs to me. Doesn't mean that I accepted it as kiddushin. Again, later on, even if she agrees, even if let's say she decides, you know what, maybe this guy is not, you know, he's a chevraman after all. Maybe he is marriage material. But too late. Lachamat and Mois. She already got it back. To be dispatched. Tikal lachamat and Mois. Doesn't work.
It's her mind.
Yeah, that's the point. In other words, right then and there, she can argue hold on. That's the thing. Right now, she's able to argue, Didi Shakli, I took mine, I didn't mean in a Kiddushin. If later on she changes her mind and decides, you know what, I was willing to be Moichel to him, and therefore to accept the Kiddushin, too late. Lachamat and Mois.
Well, that implies that if she had accepted it, she would have been married.
Right. We learn later in the Masechta, in a Braisa, Kitcha begezel of a chomos of a gneva. If a man is mekanish a woman with something that he's robbed, or chomos, something that he stole, actually not stole per se, Rashi says chomos is the yahiv dummy, he paid for it, but against the other guy's will. Sort of vaguely similar to what we learned in Gittin about Sikarikun, yeah. Oh, actually, no, not really. Sikarikun is basically you it's a mafia threatening the guy. You know, you give me your land, and I'll let you live. You know, chamas is vaguely similar, but not quite. If you're threatening him, you sell this to me or else. So you get he pays you money, but yeah, anyway, that's chamas or gneva or something that he stole. Or he grabbed a sella out of her hand and was mekadesh with that very sella, mikodeshes. She's mekodesh. On the face of it, the Braisa is talking about two different cases. One is where he stole from some third party and gave it to her, and the other is where he stole something from her and gave it back to her as kedushin. Later on, when we learn about this in the second paragraph, we're going to learn it's not like that, actually. It's all talking about one case. The gezel, the chomos, and the gneva also came from her. Anyway, so what do you mean, mekudeshes? The answer is hasim b'dishadich. The difference is that there have been shiduchim previously. He had previously been talking about her. We learned yesterday about the mekadesh b'lo shiduchi, that you're supposed to be talking about it, so you're going on dates or whatever before you actually do the kedushin. Here he had done that. She had agreed to be miskaddish to him. So now if he grabs something from her and then is miskaddish with it, fine. She previously agreed to be miskaddish to him. Then we have reason to assume that if she didn't say anything now when she took it back from him, then it means that she was really willing to be moichalit to him, therefore it became his, and therefore he can be miskaddish with it. In this case, the varshchi, there was no shadich before that.
So the fact that she spoke about kiddushin before is not sufficient. She has to agree that if she gives him or he takes from her, she would...
No, because that's the thing. Usually, kiddushin doesn't require her to say anything. In a case like this, since there was shadich beforehand, there was shiduchim beforehand, she had agreed to that I'm willing for you to be mekadesh me and we'll get married, then if at this point he takes the sella from her and then uses it to be mekadesh her, then she would have a responsibility to say, no, that's not the terms under which I'm willing to be mekadesh. If she doesn't say anything, then it is acceptable. That's what we're saying. Again, whereas in the case of the Varshchi, there was no shiduchim beforehand, therefore nothing doing. Umana tamer of the shanilon then shadich v'loy shadich. Okay, where do you get this idea that there is a difference between whether shadich, whether they talked it over beforehand or not? The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa. If a man says to a woman, take the sella, which I owe you from before, at some point previously you lent me money or what have you, and later on after he gave it to her, he says that be miskaddish to me with it, similar to what we had before with the pekadin. B'shas matan mois, but here it's a little bit different. B'shas matan mois, if he says this to her when he's giving her the money, if she agrees, then she's Mekodesh. If she doesn't agree, she's not Mekodesh. And if he gives it to her, if he says it to her, rather, after he gave it to her, as paying back his debt or whatever, then even if she agreed, she's not Mekodesh. Now, we have to consider, because before we said, the case before was that if he said Shach Matan Mo, it doesn't matter whether Rotsa or Lerotsa. As long as she didn't say no, then it was okay. Because we're in the case of the cotton. Here it's a little bit different. Here we're saying that even B'shas Matan Mois, well, we have to figure out again what Rotsa and Lerotsa means in the Spreisa. But yeah, again, my Rotsa, my Lerotsa. What do we mean by Rotsa versus Lerotsa in the Spreisa? Elam and Rotsa the Omer Ein, Lerotsa the Omer Loi. It doesn't mean, again, at face value. Rotsa means she says yes, Lerotsa means she says no. What do you tell me? Hoshtika have a condition? In that case, then what? Then what's the implication? That if she weren't to say anything, it would be valid condition? In that case, Vinisni, Mekudesh Stam. In that case, why bother mentioning Rotsa or Loi Rotsa? It's pretty obvious that in any case, when she says no, it's not a valid Kedushin. The Braitha doesn't need to tell us that. So therefore, the Braitha could have just told us that if he tells it to her B'Shas Matmos, it could have just said Mekudesh as a blanket statement, like in the Braitha before about the cotton, and we would understand on our own. Of course, it means unless she said no. Vinisni, Mekudesh Stam, Kihosim, just like that Braitha before. Ella, so we must say that in this braisa it means rotsa de omer ein lo rotsa de ishtika. So similar to the sefer of the previous braisa, rotsa means she actually says yes. Lo rotsa means she says quiet. She stays quiet. Vekotoni de ein mekodeshes, and we see she's not mekodesh. That's a problem. Now, why is that? My timer. Now, why is that? Yecholu lemeima ein shakli v'didi shakli. Because she's able to say in this case, unlike in the case of the Bikodin where it's never heard, she didn't have the ability to say, I took what's mine. Here she has the ability to say, I only took it because, look, you owe me a mother, so fine, all I'm doing is taking back, that's a seller, whatever. So all I'm doing is taking back my seller. The Ella Kasha Hach to Kitchab Gezel of Chomas of Neva, El Shachat of Salam Yad of Kitchab Kudesh. I, what are you going to do in the skitter between that and the previous Braisa about being the Kaddisher with Gezel or Chomas of Neva or grabbing a seller from her hand and being the Kaddisher with it? We say Mekudesh. Ella Lav Shmamina, so we must prove from that difference in the Braises, that Hodeshodich Hodeleshodich. The obvious answer is that one Braisa is talking about with Shodich, where they previously just talked about getting married. Therefore, that's the case of the Chot of Selam Yada. And Hodlo Shadich, in the case of the Kinsey Selazu, it's talking about there was no Shadich, and therefore, would you just accept it without saying anything, nothing doing. Because ain't Shakli Vididi Shakli. All I took was what's coming to me anyhow. Talking further about now that we went through various cases about whether the thing is worth or might be worth or whatever a shavuot. So now a little bit of a segue into a related topic. The Gemara starts off. Kinoch nafshi de Rabasi, when Rabasi passed away, Ailu Rabbanon len kotinu l'shvaitzei. The Rabbanon gathered together in the Midrash to collect all of his teachings. Kotinu literally means to grab a hold of. So Rashi describes it. If you look in the Rashi, then Kotinu l'shmaitzin, the Skabsul of Bezmedrash, they gathered into Bezmedrash, V'omru, Kol Shashama Shmur Chadashim Repeat, anybody who heard a new teaching in Rabbi Asi's name, which the rest of us may not know, Yemirana Baal Zechaderav, should tell it over to everybody else, Kedel Tzarkum, this way we can combine everything together, Shalei Shtachu, so we don't forget them.
Remember.
Yeah. They're basically coming to do Chazorah, yeah. Omelahu Havumi Rabbanan for Rabbi Yaakov Shmei. So one of the Rabbanan named Rabbi Yaakov told them the following din: Hachi Amar Abasi, Amar Abmani, Kishem She'en Isha Nichnas V'Pachas Mishavu Pruta. Just as you can't be koina a woman in kedushin with less than a shavu pruta, as we've been saying all along, Kach En Karka Nichnas V'Pachas Mishavu Pruta. So also Karka cannot be bought with less than a shavu pruta. Now, the Tosfos points out, I mean, doesn't the logic go the other way around? We learned the whole concept of Kedusha Kesef comes from, we learned from an opinion of Karka, Picha Picha Misdeach, right? Shouldn't he be saying the other way around, just like you can't buy Karka with less than a Shavuot Prota, so you can't. Tosfos gives two answers. One of them is, maybe, we learned before, there's two different Lemudim that we can use for Kedusha Kesef. One of them was Picha Picha. The other one was the Yotah Chinam, the Ein Kesef Lo Amzal, Yesh Kesef Lo Nacher. He might be learning from that one. So therefore, it's independent of Sadeh. But having mentioned, once we know from that pasuk, the Yatzachinam ain't kasef, that there has to be a shavuot pruta in the case of a woman, then we can also analogize with the karka. That's one. And Tosha says the other possibility is sometimes the Gemara will do that. Sometimes you have, even though we actually learned Kiddusha Isha from Kiddusha Karka, if we say Kiddusha Tichum is different, nevertheless, it's more straightforward to mention Karka and then say, it's more straightforward to mention Isha, to mention Kiddusha Isha, which everybody knows now that the din is can't be less than a Shavuot. And then, based on that, we also know Karka, even though in reality the actual limit is the other way around. So they said to Rabbi Yaakov, "V'altanya af b'shei nichnas nisha nichnas v'pochus m'shavu proza kaka nichnas v'pochus m'shavu proza." So they asked him, "What do you mean?" It says in a braisa that even though an isha cannot be acquired with less than a shavu proza, kaka can be bought with less than a shavu proza. So what's Rabbi Asi saying that they're exactly the same? Amalehu. So Rabbi Yaakov answers them, "Kitanya hi b'chalifin." That braisa doesn't mean that if you pay in kesef, you can pay less than a proza for kaka. No, you need something that can be called kesef for karka, unless than a pruta can't be called kesef, can't be called mamon. What we mean is that you're able to acquire karka with chalifin, which can't acquire an isha with chalifin as well. Because the tanya kinyan b'kliv af b'shem b'shal pruta. Because the din is when you're doing kinyan chalifin, the keli that you use does not have to be worth a shal pruta. We talked about that earlier. That's the logical reason why isha ain't a nikkud for chalifin, because it can be done with less than a shal pruta. So yeah. So in that case. In other words, so it depends on the method of kinyan you're using. If you're using kinyan kesef, you need a pruta for karka. If you're using kinyan chalifin, it can be the usual dinim of chalifin apply, where it can be less than a shavu prota. In the case of an isha, you only have kesef, so only a prota, and no chalifin. Then they were sitting further in this session in the Beis Medrash and going over Rav Asi's teaching. And they said another one. Now we know that there's a statement that Rav Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel, which we learned a few days ago. Anybody who does not know the detailed halachas of Gittin the Kiddushin shouldn't have anything to do with them. Which again, we said before, Rashi said that it means he shouldn't be a dayan, he shouldn't be Masada Kiddushin, he shouldn't be Masada Gittin. And Tosfos said it meant, in particular with Gittin, don't start talking with women about Iske Kiddushin, because you never know that you may be Makadish frivolously or whatever. So that was that. Omer of Asi, Omer of Yechanan, so now you should know, since we're trying to collect all of Rav Asi's teaching, that he says, in the name of Yechanan, that the Koshin La'olam Yerz Midara Mabu, this kind of thing, if people, Dayanim, actually says Dayanim, who paskin on things of Arayat and don't know the halachas, are worse for the world than the Dura Mabu. Shanema, as the Pasuk says in Hosea, describing various averus that the Jewish people are doing, Olay, there's false shvuas, of kachesh, denial of monetary claims, but of soyach and murder, the gunov, stealing, the naif, and niuf, znus, yeah, adultery, parotsu, they're spreading out, the dumim nago, and blood is touching blood. What does the pasuk mean? Kidim Targum Rabbi Yosef, as Rabbi Yosef used to translate, it's actually Targum Yonasan, but Rabbi Yosef was an expert in the Targum, in particular because he was blind, he couldn't learn Torah Shabbat, so he had to focus on Torah Shabbat. As Merldin Benin, they translate the last part of the pasuk, the parotsu of Dumim Bedumim Nago, Merldin Benin Minashaych Abreha, and they bear children from their father children with other people's wives, the mezana with other people's wives, in other words, choven al choven mezifin, the domin v'domin nago, we translate that. We translate v'domin v'domin nago as they add one aveda on top of another, uchtiv, and then the pasuk continues, al kain tev ala oretz v'um la kol yeshiva, because of this, the land of Eretz Yisrael is going to mourn, and everybody who's in it is going to be cut off, v'chayas asadu v'oyv shemayim, v'um la lulu means cut off, yes. It's actually distantly related to the word milo, cutting off. B'chayas asada, among the animals in the field, of Oif HaShamayim, and the birds in the heavens, v'gam ge'ayom yaseifu. I mean, even the fish in the water are going to be gathered in. I mean, even they are going to die off. That's for all of this. Whereas by the marble, that's what we're saying, it's worse than the marble, because the marble didn't affect the fish. And the marble only affected the land animals, the fish were safe. Whereas here we're saying even the fish. Now, what's the point? How does this relate to Moshe and Yadav B'Tuv Gittin the Kiddushin? It means that we're not, the pasuk is not only talking about the people who are actually being mezaneh with other people's wives. We're talking about the people who make that possible. How? Because, for example, they give improper gittin, so a woman gets supposedly divorced from her husband. Really, it was a possible get. Somebody else marries her. The children end up being mamzerim, and the rug, the so-called rug, made it all possible, is the one who's held responsible. Why taka are we saying it's worse than the dirt of Babel, and in what way is this worse? A couple of different takes that Mephoshim have on it. The Ritva says, for example, that once we know the dirt of Babel was punished for such things, for adultery, you've got to be extra careful about it in later times. Look what happened to them. If you don't learn a lesson from them, then yeah, it's going to be even worse. Other Mephoshim talk about also the idea, at least a couple of other things. Marsha, I think it is, says, the dirt of Babel, okay, they were mezaneh with other people's wine. It didn't cause that there's mamzerim in the world, because mamzerim is a concept only in Torah. You don't have such a thing as mamzerim in the halachos of Bnei Noach. Whereas when it's among Jews, it brings about mamzerim, which is a terrible tragedy in itself. So there's that. Another thing about it is a person himself is mezaneh. Okay, he has a yetzer hara. It tempts him to do that. A rug who's doing it, what's his yetzer hara? What's his excuse? And therefore it's worse. I think Ben Yehoyada also points out the thing about Dugim Shabayam, Tamar Chacham are compared to fish. Therefore, somebody who... A few reasons. One of them is because fish are actually on a higher Ruchni speaker level. That's why we eat them before meat, because they live... They're completely surrounded by what they live in. Therefore, they represent Alma de Skatia, the hidden world. The more ruchniistic world, as opposed to land animals, which don't necessarily have that obvious connection with the earth that they're created from. They don't need shchita, indeed, which is also because because fish are on a higher level. But yeah, Chassidus talks about, for example, this is why on Shabbos we eat fish before meat. Yeah, the Rebbe talks about it in some place, I think, in the Kutta Torah, that once we mavira the fish, then that gives us the ability to go and be mavira the meat, which is tougher to do.
We're completely surrounded with air.
Fine, but first of all, we're not, the ground we walk on, we're not surrounded by air underneath us. But besides that, people and animals weren't created from air, they were created from the earth. We're not completely surrounded by the earth that we were created from. Fish are completely surrounded by the water that they're created from. Anyway, so therefore, for that and for other reasons, also, for that matter, also, Torah Nimshal Olamayim, right? Torah is compared to water. The fish who live in water are a metaphor for Tamar Chacham. So therefore, these quote-unquote Tamar Chachamim, who think that they're expert in the halachas of Gittin and Kedushin, and they're not, and yeah. They might ask the Ema Abda Ovid Lekulu. Why? Maybe the pasuk means that only if you do all these Avedas, there are the false witnesses, and the denying, and the killing, etc., then Al-Kain Tevalar, it's not just for one of them. The answer is Lo Sakadaisis. You can't think that. You have a different pasuk in Yirmiyah that says, because of false Shavuos, the land is going to mourn. So we see only one of these things, the Allah, all by itself.
Is
enough.
When you're done on the Allah,
No. We're saying a separate thing. Of the catalog of dinim that Hosea mentioned, the first one on the list of the catalog of Averis, the first one was Allah, that people are swearing falsely. Yirmiyahu mentions that all by itself as a reason for the destruction of Eretz Yisrael. So we see that Allah by itself is a reason for that. By analogy, all the other ones, each of the other ones is enough by itself also. Okay, the Ema Allah Lachud B'Hanach L'Chudei, and fine. Maybe what Hosea means is an Allah all by itself is enough to cause Eretz Yisrael to be destroyed. Then the combination of Kachash, Verotza, Yachagoy, etc. is also. The answer is no. Mixiv U'Farotzu. Why? Does the Pasuk finish off U'Farotzu? And they're multiplying their Avedas one on top of the other, that we should assume, therefore, it's one long list. No, parotsu, because if it says parotsu, meaning it's a separate statement of its own, that parotsu by itself is a reason for Al-Kain Tev Al-Arth, the reason for the land to be destroyed and to be mourning. So we see that each one stands on its own.
Parotsu
literally means they're spreading out. We quoted it before to say that the parotsu, like the parotsu, in Rabbi Yosef's translation before, we said that it means they're fathering children on other people's wives. Part also like they're breaking out of their boundaries. Instead of staying with their own wives, they're breaking out of their boundaries to yeah.
Preachers.
Yeah.
Well, preachers is different.
Okay, but what do you think?
Preachers like
Yeah, like yeah, I mean breaking the boundaries, yeah. Let me see all that. Hodu Yafter the Khamri. Then the Chachamim again was sitting still in the session in the Bismedish, going over to Rav Ashi's dinim, the Khamri, and they said another one. That was a Mishnah that says in the Sefer Kinim, If a woman brought her chatas, now this is a woman who gave birth. The Torah tells us she has to bring two karbanas. Well, she has to bring, if she's rich, she brings an oila. If she's rich, she brings a lamb and a bird. One of the chatas, one of an oila. If she's poor, then she brings two birds. The usual assumption in the Mishnayos is that most women were poor, and then usually they bring two birds. Anyway, one's supposed to be a chatas, one's supposed to be an oila. She brought her chatas, umeta, and then she died. Yavir Yoshin oilasa. Who Yoshin have to bring her oila? So now, on this, Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel that this is only if she separated a bird for that oila while she was still alive. So then the chiddush is that the point is that we still have to bring it after she died, which wouldn't be the other way around. If it was the other way around, if the oila had been brought while she's alive, and then the chatas is around after she died, then no, that's a chatas shemetz ba'ala, that's a chatas where the owner died, and in that case, we don't bring that as a korban. It goes with it. The oila can be an oila can be brought after somebody died, but a chatas not. Also true, but yeah. But if you did it the other way around. If you did it the other way around, yeah. But if she did not separate out the bird for the oila while she was still alive, then we don't force the Yoshim to get a bird and bring it. Then the Nechosim don't become chayev, the estate doesn't become chayev in that oila. Alma Kasava Shibur Alav Daraisa, which goes to show, therefore, that Shmuel holds that the concept of a Shibur is not Daraisa. We don't say this concept that we have throughout Shas, that when a person has, let's say, borrowed money or whatever, a person owes money to somebody else, and then he dies, that there's a shibud on the estate, and therefore it can be paid. The Yoshim have to pay it off, or that if you sold property to somebody else, it can be collected from that. That whole concept is not Jaredaisa. So therefore,
can we take it from Karbanis with a special?
Once we have it by Karbanis, which is a monetary obligation, then we're not talking about again, she's dead already. She doesn't need a kapara anymore. So we're talking about it strictly as a monetary obligation. So if we're saying that, yeah. This is a milvah alpeh on the face of it. But when there's a milvah alpeh, there's no shibud anyway. But yeah. So he's saying that this whole concept of shibud is only dirabanan. However, Rav Asi says in the name of Rav Yechanan, no, even if she didn't separate out the korban while she's alive, we still make the Yoshim bring it. Alma kasava shibud have a daraisa, which goes to show, therefore, that he disagrees with Shmuel. He holds that shibud is daraisa.
And what is it then?
Well, it's a machlokes then, that's all. The question is, what do we need? What do we need to be told that Rav Asi said that in the name of Rav Yechanan, that he's arguing with Shmuel on that point whether shibud is daraisa or not? We already have in a different place, in a different context, we have that machlokes. The Rav and Shmuel, the Amit Havayim, Milval Pei Ein Egovim Na Yoshin V'Lo Min Alakochus. Rav and Shmuel both say that a verbal milva where there's no shar, you cannot collect from the Yoshin. You cannot collect it from people who bought property from the guy who had borrowed money. Wait. Which means, in other words, therefore, now why would that be? It would have to be because shibud is not daraisa. So when it's written in a shtar, fine, you yourself are accepting a shibud on it, then fine, you then fine. The Torah may not have obligated you in it, but you obligated yourself. When there was no shtar, then no shibud.
Without a
shtar, no shibud. Whereas Rav Yechanan and Rav Shlokish both say that a verbal milva you can collect from the Yoshim or from the buyers. Obviously, now why would that be? If you yourself haven't accepted a shibud on yourself, must be because the concept of shibud exists there, I said. So we see Rav Yechanan holds that, Shmuel doesn't. So fine, that amounts to the same thing as the situation with the Kobanis. What do we need Rav Asi to be telling us that? Or for that matter, I mean, what do we need this whole discussion for? What do we need Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel's din? What do we need Rav Asi's din? The answer is tzricha. We do need both cases. The Yitma Bahal, because if we only have the case of a person who, the second machlokes that he brought about milval peh versus milva b'shtar, we would say the difference is because that's not a milva that's written in the Torah. There's no actual, the case of the Karbonas, or a number of other cases, there's something where the Torah itself imposes a certain obligation on you that you would not otherwise have had to pay us something. In the case of the korbanos, for example, you're a woman, you gave birth, you have an obligation to bring two korbanos. As opposed to, for example, when you borrow money from somebody, yeah, of course, the Torah says you got to pay back your debts. But Tosfos points out that's different. The Torah is basically just reinforcing what common sense is. Common sense says you borrow money from somebody, you got to pay them back. That can't really be considered a milvah sort of a Torah. The Torah itself doesn't explicitly say what the amount is that you have to pay. It's logical that it's the amount that you borrowed, but the Torah doesn't explicitly spell that out, as opposed to, for example, with the korbanos, where the Torah explicitly spells out you have to bring two birds.
If you don't pay that money, you have a problem.
In the case of the birds, in the case of the korbanos of the Yoledes, I mean, technically, if she didn't bring a korbanos, all it means is she can't eat truma and kachim. Truma, actually, she can't eat without it. Kardashim, she can't eat. Okay, she's dead. It's a moot point anyway, but she's still, the korbanos is still supposed to be brought. Not paying milva is a problem deraisa, sure, but we're talking about the guy's dead. We're talking about does the shibud extend to his estate to the extent that the yoshim have to pay it, or other people who bought property from him can have property seized from them to pay it? That's what Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish are arguing that not. But if we only had that case, we would say the reason why Shmuel says not Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, sorry, Rav and Shmuel, the reason why they say there's no shibud in that case is because it's not a milvah that's written in the Torah. Tosfos gives other example, Pidya Ben, Erchin, these kinds of things. If the Torah hadn't actually told you that you have to pay X amount for them, the Zikin is another one. If the Torah didn't actually tell you the concept of paying these things, you wouldn't know about it. A milveh is not...
Do you apply the Zikin and milveh?
No. And milveh are two completely different things. One is you borrowed money from somebody. The other is the Eved is telling you have to redeem your firstborn son from the Kohen. Anyway. So that's not, it's not a milva that's written in the Torah, Abel Bahach, but in the case of the Korbanos, you would think maybe Shmuel agrees, okay, it is a milva, it's a stronger kind of milva, it's a stronger kind of obligation, because the Torah itself actually explicitly imposes on you, bring those Korbanos, therefore you would think maybe the shibud survives the woman's death. The Iyashmin and Bahar, and if we only have the case of the Korbanos, you would say Bahar Kamar Rabbi Yochanan, you would say, you know why Rabbi Yochanan said the Shibud is stronger than it, therefore that she has to bring her heirs have to bring the Korban after she died, because the Milva Ksuva B'Shtar Damya, because a Milva that's actually written in the Torah is the equivalent of one that's written in a Shtar. The very fact that the Torah itself wrote down an obligation that you have to pay it makes it the equivalent of a loan with a Shtar. The logic behind it would be, because the logic behind it would be, what the Gemara is going to mention this in a second, is, on the face of it, if it's a shibud in the Torah, you could argue there's more of a curl to it. The reason why, the ultimate reason why we say, according to Rav and Shmuel, that there's no shibud in the case of a milvah alpeh, is because, well, the Yerushim is all different, but at least in the case of the Lekuchas, the reason is because somebody else who bought property from you, how do they have any way of knowing that you borrowed this money and that you owe? They can't know, therefore they didn't buy the field or whatever it is, knowing that there was this possibility. A milvah ksuva b'Torah, you know that a yoledes is chayav in korbanos, you know that a person who had a firstborn son is chayav in pidyon aban, etc. Therefore, you should consider it as if it was written in the shtar. And also, since as Rashi mentioned before, the difference is when a milvah b'shtar is you accepted the chiyuv on yourself, it's fine. We all accepted the Torah on ourselves at Har Sinai. Therefore, it's included. But in the case of the regular milvah alpeh, Eimah Mordel of the Shmuel, you would think maybe he agrees with Rav and Shmuel that there's no shibud. Therefore, we need both cases. Amar Apophet, Hilchasa, the bottom line halacha, milvah alpeh gozim in ayoshin, ve'ena gozim in alakofet. The bottom line is that a milvah alpeh, you can collect from the yoshin, you can't collect it from the lakofet. Because shibud is deraisa, because the concept of shibud, it does exist deraisa. Like Rabbi Yochanan is saying. The Eina goes from the lakuchas to less lekola, but you still can't collect from the lakuchas in the case of milvah alpeh because there's no koil. Because again, you can't expect the lakuchas to have known that there's any outstanding loan over here that they should know to. So therefore, when there's a milvah b'shtar, there's a koil. when there's a shibudoraisa, no, even when there's, so Rashi says, even when there's shibudoraisa, actually, even when we're saying, for example, the case of the korbanos, or the case of pidyon haben, or what have you, if there's no actual shtar, then no, the lekuchas couldn't have known, necessarily, there's no coil that the person, you know it's an abstract thing, yeah, the person is supposed to do pidyon haben, the person is supposed to, you don't actually know that this person still has korbanos outstanding, or pidyon haben outstanding, or whatever, there's no coil, therefore you couldn't have known when you bought it. Whereas when there's a shtar, there's a coil, when you are going and buying property from this guy who owes money, you're taking a knowing risk. You know that there's a shibud, you know there's a mortgage on it, you know it might be taken away from you to satisfy that.
Because there's a coil.
Because there's a coil, yeah. Therefore, you should be expected to know. Tosfos and a bunch of other Rishonim discussed a contradiction on the face of it between our Gemara and a Gemara in Bava Basra that says a different reason. It says exactly the opposite. That Rav Papa there actually, it's the same Rav Papa, says exactly the opposite. Shibud is not Daraisa, but we still allow you to collect from the ocean because we don't want Shalitino Delos Bifne Leuven. We don't want people who are going to come to borrow money and the other guy is going to say, I don't want to bother lending you money and slam the door because he's going to say, you know what, after you die, what happens if you die and then I can't collect from anybody. So that Gemara seems to contradict ours. So Tosfos gives an answer from Rabbeinu Chananel that there's a difference between we're talking about over here, again, things like Erchid, things like Kobonus and whatever, where we're talking Shibud HaDaraisa. There's no Milva, so there's no Ni'ilas Delas. That Gemara over there is talking about ordinary loans. There's a number of other takes that Rishonim and Achroinim have on it, including that maybe indeed our Gemara does contradict the one in Bava Basra. Okay, you have sometimes different Lashonis in different places in the Gemara. Going on now, for now we're finished with the various kinyanim, of Anisha. Kesef, Shtar, and Bia. We've gone through all of those. Now, the next part of the Mishnah continued. V'koyna esafma v'get of Mrs. Abal. We said that a woman reacquires herself, becomes independent from her husband, with a get or with her husband dying. So, v'shleim a get. I can understand where we know that a get frees her, just in the cost of La Sefer Kursus. The Pasuk says he writes her a document of cutting off, so that's it. She's cut off from her husband, and now she's independent. Elamisus Abal Manolon. Where do we know that her husband dying makes her mutter to remarry? Maybe. You know what? Lahavdil, there are religions that say that when a woman's husband dies, that's it. You know, yeah. You may have heard of back in that's it. She's not allowed to remarry ever again. Sort of like, well, we're going to bring in a Yavama soon, but, you know, there used to be a thing in India a couple hundred years ago that a woman whose husband died, and they cremate him, as they used to do there, that she would be expected to throw herself on the funeral pyre also, until the British came along and said, basically, you know, fine, you keep your custom, and we'll keep our custom and execute anybody who does such a thing, and they gave it up. Anyway, you can look it up sometime. Okay. Anyway.
We do have it by a king.
By a king, that's true. By a king's wife, you do have it. Yeah, okay, that's different. Yeah. Okay, anyway, the answer is smarto. Okay, it's a logical thing. Who Oster, but who Sharsa? He's the one who caused her to become Oster by being a Kaddisher. So fine, his death removes that, and therefore she becomes Mutter. Why? The Gemara says, Arayas, the Shasalahu, Vale Sharalahu. Why? The case of Arayas, for example, when she becomes a Scottish to the guy, she becomes also in a number of his relatives, and he becomes also in a number of her relatives. Those sort of don't go away just because he dies or just because she dies, as the case may be. The Asalahu, Vale Sharalahu. They become also on the Kiddushin. They don't become Mutter, most of them anyway. A wife's sister is about the only exception. They don't become Mutter after the person dies. No, that logic doesn't work. No, rather it's because since the Torah tells us that a Yavama who doesn't have children is also to marry unless she does Chalitza Yivum, implying, but if she does have children, she's mutter to marry whoever she wants. Therefore, we see in general, a widow is allowed to be married. The Gemara says, why? The Duma ain't labana masura la'ala b'shari la'yavam. No, maybe what the pasuk means, maybe you should argue what the pasuk means. If she doesn't have children, she's also to marry to anybody else, but there's a heter, she can marry the yavam exclusively. Maybe it's okay. It doesn't mean if she has children, she can marry whoever she wants. It means if she has children, she can't marry anybody. The wife of a dead man shouldn't marry anybody outside the family. Unless, if there's no children, then yavama yavaya lahom. Yeah. Yeah, you could argue like that, yeah? Ella, no, let's try a different tack. Since the Torah tells us a kohen gadol is not allowed to marry an amona, hola kohen hedyot sharia, implying but she is allowed to marry a kohen hedyot. And if she's allowed to marry a kohen hedyot, the same goes for anybody else. Okay, question is, but doing with a kohen gadol allowed with kol alma b'eser? Fine, maybe argue that what the Torah means is everybody else. Fine, I'll agree. Let's say there's no chiyuv lam for her to marry anybody else. Maybe there's an issur eser for her to marry anybody else. From a kohen gadol, besides that, it's an eser that would exist for everybody else. There would also be a lav, the lav of marrying an amana. Hi, eser by evinte. What kind of eser are you thinking about? Tosfos points out the actual pasuk that we would think creates an eser is the pasuk says the gavach beishto. The pasuk says that a man married his wife, implying we learn from that in Sanhedrin in connection with the Sheva Mitzvot Menayach, the loy be'eshes chaveri. We learn from that the concept that a man is not allowed to commit adultery, even in Ben Noach, is not allowed to commit adultery with somebody else's wife. So you would argue that in that case, that eser survives the husband dying, she's still considered eshes chaveri. Okay, the Gemara says, so, hi esemaya bitte, what exactly do you think, what kind of eser do you think would exist if the lav and the kores went away? Idahanya misses a baal, if you're going to say the misses a baal, the death of the husband, is enough to take away the lav of loisinah, and the kores, the isu kores, and the isu skila, and whatever that are involved with that, tishri lagamri, then she should be completely mutter, there shouldn't be an isu eser still left. And if you're going to tell me, if you're going to think that the husband's death still leaves her also, then she should say the same degree of Isra, the same Kardas, the same Lav, etc. What makes you think only the Esther should survive his death? And I asked, why not? Allah Maloy. I picked him and he said, why shouldn't we think that the essay is different? I picked him and he said, like my lesson. You could argue that yes, once he died, the Isur Misa and Kores and what have you goes away. All that's left is the essay. Midi Dehabe Psulan of Doshim, because you could make an analogy between it to the case Psulan of Doshim, an animal which was supposed to be brought to the Korban and became possible, developed a mom or whatever. Where originally, while they're still hektish, while they're still designated for a Korban, you're not allowed to use them. If you do, you chayev a Korban Me'ilah. And you're not allowed to shear them and you're not allowed to work with them. Parkinu, but if you're part to them, parkinu means, I mean, literally means you free them, so you're part to them. Me'ila lasbu, now me'ila no longer applies. But the Isurim of shearing it for the wool or working with it still exists. So you see that certainly Isurim can survive a changing status. So maybe the Isur Esa, yeah. Hell or no. No, since you have soldiers going to war with that's not a good answer. In other words, yeah. So we're going to try a different one. When soldiers are going to war, we learned from Soja about the announcements that the Kohen Mashiach Melchama makes to get whoever needs to go home to go home. One of them is a person who was Makadish, a woman, and should go home, and Yomus Melchama, because he may die in war, the Ish Acha Yukachana, and another man will marry her. So you see, she'd be allowed to marry another man. Why? Then you say the word acher just means the yavam. Again, we established before, for sure the pasuk says that the widow, the yavama, marries the yavam, but maybe it means only him, maybe not anyone else. Yeah. Amar Ravashi, based Shuvas B'davar, so Ravashi answers back. I can disprove that with two answers. Chodah the yavam la'ikri acher. Number one, the yavam is not called acher. We learned this previously in Yavamas. Actually, on the side of it here, in Masoret HaShas, it has a long discussion. Tosfos also has a long discussion that for certain purposes, the Yavam can be called Acher. Tosfos himself says that later on, we're going to have in a few blocks, we're going to have an example of it. But anyway, Tosfos gives an answer that when you're talking about other people as well, then when you're saying, for example, she's allowed to marry other people, then the Yavam is included in that Acher. Here, if you want to argue she's only allowed to marry the Yavam, there's no reason to call him Acher. Let us say, Vish Yavam, Yitachana, or whatever. Also, he has a pasuk in connection with divorce that says, suppose her second husband hates her, the kasav l'seif akrusus, that he writes her a get, or the first man, or the second man dies, then we say she's not allowed to return to her first husband. The itkesh misal gerushin. Therefore, we have a hekesh between death and gerushin. Ma gerushin shayyav gemeres, just like gerushin makes her mutter and completely mutter to marry somebody else, which is no question about that, seif akrusus. Misa shayyav gemeres, the same thing as far as misa. You can't say that anything survives missing. And again, Rashi says, why don't you just tell him, the pasuk is telling us that a woman who got divorced from her, say, widowed from her second husband is not allowed to return to her first husband, implying she could have returned to somebody else. Because you'd still have a problem of the potential essay. But by saying, by making this hekesh, you're making it clear. Just like there's no lav and no essay and no nothing after gerushin, so there's no lav and no essay and no nothing after missa. And that's it. But,